Welcome to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett McGarry, and the first full trailer has arrived for what could turn out to be the most important movie Marvel has ever made, for the studio at least. Plus,
I'm Jeff Braun. I watched a long documentary series about one of the biggest rock bands of all time, and Shogun wrapped up its stellar first and possibly only season. Plus,
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I am really excited for an upcoming movie from M. Night Shyamalan.
I told you, you're not welcome here. You're not welcome anywhere. Now get the f*** out of my bar.
Just give me one more drink and then I'll leave.
Hi, Peanut. I'm gonna need you to come with me right now.
Look, lady, I'm not interested.
All right, well, I'm sort of on the tick-tick, so upsy-daisy.
Here we go. Oh, whiskey of the claws. It's quite common in Wolverines over 40.
You don't want this.
Unless you want to take a deep breath through your forehead, I suggest you reconsider.
That's a clip from the first full trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Want to talk about what's haunting you, or should we wait for a third act flashback?
Go f*** yourself.
It's an MCU movie, and it has lots of swears. In fact, it has more F-bombs in the trailer than in all of the MCU. It also has lots of violence. This will easily be the most violent movie in the MCU, and it debuts July 26th, 2024.
This is what I'm talking about. Slow-motion action sequence. Who knows if you live or die?
Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah! So, this movie broke the record. This movie trailer broke the record for most watched trailer in 24 hours with 365 million views around the world. And as mentioned, it has the record now for most F-bombs in the MCU, not just in a trailer, but in the MCU. And this this includes cutoff lines like in Spider-Man Homecoming's ending. Because the previous record for swear words in Marvel trailers was also held by Reynolds, Mark with a Mouth, shared between the first Deadpool 2 and Deadpool's Red Band trailers. But those technically were not the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So now he's in.
Were there any other, are there any other full F words in the entire MCU? Not even a, I feel like Iron Man must have said it once.
I don't know.
But probably not.
I was trying to think about that and I could have looked it up, but
the
Spider-Man, I can't think of one.
That happens at the end of the first two Spider-Mans. Far From Home, he does it too, because that's when the J. Jonah Jameson reveals his name on the screen at Times Square.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So this movie looks, the main thing that I was concerned with was that this would end up being somewhat of a watered down version, because if the first Deadpool came out in 2016, he's a super popular character in Marvel Comics, and Ryan Reynolds has previously played Deadpool in a Marvel movie, X-Men Origins Wolverine, and he was not at all like what he is in the comic books. And in the comic books, he is violent. He's got a big mouth. He's obscene. He talks to the readers a lot. So in the movie, he talks to the camera a lot. And they did some test footage at some point. And Reynolds has essentially, I don't think he's like taken actual credit for it, but he leaked some test footage for a Deadpool movie. Internet went insane. They went ahead and made the movie, and it was a huge hit. And then there was a sequel in 2019. And now we've got this third one, but it's in the MCU. So were they going to stick with the R rating that the first two movies had with the violence and the obscenity, or were they going to try to PG-13 this and water it down somewhat? And I think this trailer was partly a statement to assuage any fears or doubts about that. But also, we got our first real look at Hugh Jackman back in the role of Wolverine, of Logan, a role he's been playing for over 20 years since the first X-Men movie came out. A role he wasn't even supposed to get, by the way. The guy was supposed to play Wolverine, and the name escapes me. I think it might have been Stuart Townsend, perhaps, was supposed to be Wolverine.
Huh.
And he bailed or something happened, and Hugh Jackman got pulled off the bench last second and essentially just thrown into the production while it was already underway.
Happy accident.
No kidding, because it completely redefined his career.
Oh, this movie wouldn't be happening the way it is if Hugh Jackman didn't get or wasn't Wolverine originally. If it was that other guy, this would just be Deadpool 3 just with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, because it's so exciting. And so I think for me, three main things that I'm excited about. One, that there is an actual hard R Deadpool movie in the MCU. Good for them for seeing the light and doing the right thing. The second is seeing Hugh Jackman in the MCU back in the role of Wolverine, because he sort of signed off from the character of Wolverine in the movie Logan back in 2017, which was a terrific film. So we thought he was done. And the fact that they're actual like good friends. So to see these good friends come to like, you know, Ryan Reynolds had a hand in major hand in convincing him to come back to this movie.
I have got, I am very much over all the multiverse shenanigans in the MCU and also in the DCEU and wherever else this stuff pops up, except the one thing that it's still useful for is stuff like this, because I gather they're bringing this Wolverine from some other universe or blah, 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 because of the events of Logan and all that sort of thing. So in that case, it's like, ooh, and we can get actors we like to do this kind of crossover stuff, then it's fine. Although, it also does dissipates all the, doesn't matter if they died because there's a billion other universes they can bring them right back from kind of thing. So it's a little bit dilutes it like that, but in this case, I will make an exception.
Yeah, there's a line in the, and we're not going to go into like the break. If you want a breakdown of the trailer and all of the Easter eggs and things that are in there, you can find ad nauseum videos on YouTube. Like my entire homepage yesterday was just Deadpool and Wolverine Easter egg from the trailer. But there is a line in there because they do bring in the TVA, the Time Variance Authority, from the Loki television show. And they explain that this Wolverine let his entire world down. So, yeah, he's been pulled from some world. We don't know which one.
Yeah.
And we see them at the end jumping through a sorcerer sling into some other world. So who knows where they're going? Who knows what they're going to save? But what I'm hoping is that they use this movie to somehow
close that
course correct on this multiverse nonsense.
Yeah.
Like try to clean it up or at least give it some direction. Like, where are we going with this thing?
Yeah. I was reading an article from British publication earlier today or yesterday, and they were like, hey, how come there's not a Shang-Chi 2? Because that was a great movie and that's 4 years old already. And we haven't heard boo about the character or a sequel or anything to do with that. So the MCU has a lot of cleaning up to do. And they're right. That was a good movie. And if any of those phase 4 or 5 or whatever it was movies deserve a sequel, it's that one.
Yeah, I agree. There should have been a sequel to Shang-Chi, and maybe it's in development and they're just dragging their heels on that, because I know that they've kind of stepped back. This is the only Marvel movie we're going to see this year. We don't have as many TV shows coming out because they were so focused on just churning out content for their streaming platform, and most of it was okay. Loki was pretty good.
Loki was good, yeah.
Some of their TV shows have been okay, and some of them have been outright terrible.
Right.
Like Secret Invasion was a total failure, as far as I'm concerned, in the grand scheme of it. And who knows what the fallout of that, or if we'll ever see any characters come back. Like, remember the one at the end who had all of the superpowers?
That's right. She's the most powerful being in the entire MCU.
Yeah.
And neither one of us can remember her name.
And will we ever see her again? But this movie, I mentioned that this could be one of the most important movies, maybe the most important movie Marvel has ever made, because they need this movie, not just to make a lot of money, but they need this movie to clean up the mess that Marvel has made. And I think there's an irony there that a 20th Century Fox property, and they use the song Like a Prayer by Madonna in this, and there are previous jokes that Deadpool is calling himself the Marvel Jesus. Is this movie the Messiah that Marvel needs to resurrect itself? So we'll find out July 26th. Can't wait. The trailer is awesome. And I've been trying to avoid the Easter egg videos because I don't want to get spoiled by too much. But there is a lot of neat stuff in this trailer that had me go, ooh, what's that? Oh, what's that? I want to know. Some nerd on the internet is going to know. And up next, I want to tell you about that M. Night Shyamalan movie that I'm excited about. And then Jeff's going to tell you about the big music doc that consumed a lot of his time this week, had him living on a prayer, so to speak. You're listening to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett, he's Jeff, we are The Couch Potatoes. We talked about the big trailer from the big movie Deadpool and Wolverine, but there was another trailer that came out this past week. Really cool trailer that caught me off guard. And we say this with a healthy dose of skepticism and trepidation regarding any excitement shown for this movie, because it's a new one from M. Night Shyamalan, and it's called Trap.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Lady Raven.
Hurry, come on.
Wait. I gotta tie my shoe.
No dad jokes, this is serious. Come on.
I'm sorry. I mean, Lady Raven.
Save me from myself. This is slap dad. Thank you. This is literally the best day of my life.
Josh Hartnett plays a dad taking his daughter to a concert to see a musician named Lady Raven, who is played by a musician named Salika. And you can actually listen to original songs from Salika as Lady Raven at ladyravenmusic.com. So once he gets her settled into her seats, he heads off to the can. But he notices something strange is afoot in the concourse, so he stops to ask someone about it.
Cooper.
Jamie.
What's with all the police trucks outside? The cameras everywhere, Jamie.
I'm not supposed to tell.
Something happening?
Don't rat me out. I won't. You know the butcher? The freaking nut job that goes around just chopping people up? Well, the feds or whatever heard that he's gonna be here today, so they set up a trap for him. This whole concert? It's a trap. They're watching all the exits, checking everyone that leaves. There's no way to get out of here.
All right. So then he gets to the bathroom, pulls out his phone, does Josh Hartnett, and he opens up a security camera app that says basement, and it shows a guy tied up. He is the butcher. Will he escape the trap? Find out August 9th.
You're kind of dope, right?
So I got to tell you, Jeff, M. Night Shyamalan has had obviously a spotty track record,
yep,
with some hits and some misses. This one looks cool.
It looks very cool. I really enjoyed this trailer, although I will say that merch table attendant had a surprising amount of information about police tactical stuff that he probably shouldn't be telling strangers, because he knows that one of them's a serial killer. But I'm very much interested in this movie, too. I liked his last movie, Old. That one where people go to the beach and age rapidly.
Yep.
The ending kind of falls apart or whatever, which is kind of a big deal with a movie like that. But it was actually mostly a pretty fun movie to watch. So, yeah, I'm curious too. But, yeah, the M. Night track record is, I'm still hurting from The Happening. And that's like 20 years ago.
Oh, that was, God, that was so bad.
But that's a top five all-time worst movie I've ever seen.
Part of me wants to go back and watch it again.
Agreed.
Just to see how bad.
Hey, Tree, don't kill us, okay?
Well, and who knows what is shown in the trailer for Trap? Who knows how much of that is real? Like, Josh Hartnett might have imagined that whole thing. Maybe he's playing out scenarios in his head. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? But it looks creepy and it looks cool. Again, that comes out August 9th.
There's a massive documentary coming out this week on Disney Plus about one of the most massive rock bands of all time. It's called Thank You, Goodnight, The Bon Jovi Story.
This sonic boom happened.
The energy of the band, undeniable. Like a freight train coming at you.
We're a bunch of kids from New Jersey. What do you guys think?
Some of the songs I wrote in my bedroom in New Jersey. I remember the day we wrote Living on a Prayer, not thinking much of the song.
I said, that's the best song we've written to date.
John's choruses demand to be sung by 20,000 people in an arena.
We were just crushing it. Anything that every one of those bands talks about, we did. It was real fun. And I thought everybody else was enjoying it too.
Wrong.
Thank you. Good night. The Bon Jovi Story is a Hulu docuseries in the U.S. and Canada, where there is no Hulu. It's out this weekend on Disney Plus. I called it massive, and it is. It's four episodes that takes over 5 hours. And if you're like me, you might not have thought telling the Bon Jovi Story would take 5 hours, but it does. And it's really all pretty interesting, too. The first episode's an hour long. It covers kind of putting the band together and their first two albums. The second episode's the longest one. It's 90 minutes, and it covers their rise to stardom with Slippery When Wet in New Jersey, a four-year period that features, you know, their two biggest albums and nonstop touring, and then the burnout that that caused. The third and fourth episodes are about 75 minutes each, covering Bon Jovi's 90s era in which they maintained their star power somehow in a rapidly changing music landscape well into the 2000s, and then the legacy they've left after 40 years and how things kind of fell apart a bit when Richie Sambora left the band and how they're still plugging along. There's also this parallel story across all the episodes of current Bon Jovi, which mostly revolves around John Bon Jovi's voice issues. He has not been singing great. He's had vocal cord surgery, things like that. It's all good stuff. I realize that, like everyone, you know, I've been listening to them for 40 years without knowing a whole lot about them. And this documentary was clearly commissioned by John Bon Jovi, so don't expect a lot of negative stuff about him, really, but it's not just a big ad for how awesome he is either. And to his credit, the documentary crew does a few interviews with the departed guitarist Richie Sambora, and those guys don't really get along. Sambora sort of gets to tell his side of it. He sits down and goes, are we telling the truth or are we telling lies today? So he's kind of a little bit dubious about the entire process himself. Well, it's been over a decade since he left, so there doesn't seem to be a lot of bitterness on either side or anything like that. Should also point out that Bon Jovi has a new album coming out in June, and as the band members say more than once in the series, we never went away, and they haven't. They've been putting out albums and touring fairly steadily this whole time, although the touring has been spotty the last decade or so, in part because of the pandemic, of course, and in part because of his voice problems. And John Bon Jovi says several times that if he can't sing 100%, he won't do shows. He says he has nothing to prove to anyone. He doesn't need the money. The only reason he has to tour is because of the joy that comes with a killer concert. And if he can't deliver, he doesn't feel the joy. So what's the point? That I have a lot of respect for, because in this day and age of nostalgia worship, a Bon Jovi concert is something that would be very popular. And no one would even blame him for kind of chasing the paycheck with something like that, even if he can only sing it like 80%. Overall, the four episodes is a fun series. I was going to break up my viewing over the course of a week, but I watched the first three episodes all in one shot and then watched the fourth one the next day. They were never my favorite band, but I did really like them a lot in that sort of mid-80s to mid-90s era. I saw them twice in concert, and they're both really great shows. You can argue the artistic merit of Bon Jovi songs all you want, but the truth is they're among the very best at making catchy, anthemic rock songs that are easy and fun to sing along to. And I've always been very impressed with how their entire music scene, the hair bands of the 80s, kind of literally disappeared almost overnight when Nirvana and Pearl Jam came along in the early 90s. But Bon Jovi somehow persevered, and just when you'd be ready to write them off, they'd jump back into the spotlight. Like by the year 2000, you know, you'd have been forgiven for thinking, well, they've had 15 years of fame, time to move on from Bon Jovi. But then It's My Life came out and they were back at the top of the pile all over again. Kind of really staggering success and a pretty interesting road to it and along it. I highly recommend this series. The only knock I have was that I was surprised by how much cursing there was in it. It's like Deadpool levels. And I know they're rock stars and I don't have a problem with cursing in general. It's just that they've always felt like such a safe kind of rock band, if that makes sense. Like Guns N' Roses was, you know, felt kind of dangerous, you know, but Bon Jovi just really didn't. But they're blue collar New Jersey background guy and the guys, and they've been hanging around bars and clubs all their lives, so I guess the language is expected to be a little rough. I give it 3.5 couch cushions out of 5 for Thank You, Good Night, The Bon Jovi Story, out now on Disney Plus.
And you talk about them being a safe band, Jeff. Yep. There was a big stretch in the 90s where a ton of rock bands, Def Leppard, for example, Aerosmith, and Bon Jovi all had these huge power ballads. What was there? Was it Always?
Always. That was, yeah, it was on their Greatest Hits album in 94. Why do I know that? yeah.
But that you could argue, is as big, at least, like, obviously we all think of Living on a Prayer. Or not all, but I would imagine most people would think of that. But,
Wanted Dead or Alive.
Always was the second one for me. Like, that's the second song that popped into my head. And maybe it was because you were talking about the 90s, but that song was as big as anything at that time. Up next, I've got a bone to pick with one of the movies that came out last week. You're listening to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brad. He's Jeff. We are The Couch Potatoes. We're going to tell you what's new at the movies this weekend in a moment. But before that, there's a movie that came out last week that I got really mad about after we recorded the show last week.
I have a mission I want you to lead.
I'll need my own team. You won't like them. They're all bad.
They'll need to be.
What's the target?
Hitler's Atlantic Fleet.
Marvelous.
Guy Ritchie's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Sometimes movies only open in the United States, but most of the big releases open in the United States and Canada. Would you have ever guessed that this was going to be one of those that did not?
Nope, would not have. To my memory, this is only the second time I remember this happening.
And the last time it happened was just last month.
Oh, this was only the third time I remember this happening.
It was that Arthur the King movie with Mark Wahlberg and a dog. And what was the movie that you're thinking of?
I cannot remember what it was. I think it starred Anna Faris, and we made a big deal about it coming out. And it literally never opened in Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it wasn't because it's on Netflix or Disney Plus here. It was just went straight to video here. That's all it did.
And I think that Moonfall movie, remember that stupid disaster movie about the moon
right.
is actually an alien so I've, space station
for some
or something?
Reason seen three times.
Well, I think they pulled that last second. If memory serves, that there was this was kind of pandemic shenanigans.
Yeah.
But there was at least one movie that was pulled like almost last second from a Canadian release. Anyway, the point is, every week when we're doing the Couch Potatoes, I go to sites like Rotten Tomatoes to see what they've got in some of the new movies. And then I go to websites like Cineplex. I go to websites like Landmark Cinemas. And I check the listings. And sometimes some of the releases from the States are not there. Or they're delayed. You know, they come out in Canada a week later. And sometimes there are movies coming out in Canada that are not coming out elsewhere. Like sometimes a movie will get its wide release, but it might get an early release in Canada. Anyway, the moral of the story is check your listings. I failed to check my listings because I just assumed this movie was going to be in Canada. And I guess it's part of a Lionsgate deal. And that's what happened with Arthur the King. They've struck some deal with, at least with some of their movies, where they'll release in the States at the cinema, but internationally, they'll eventually just show up on Prime Video. Who knows when? I don't even know if Arthur the King is available on Prime yet. Don't care. So, yeah, I'm really irked because I kind of wanted to see this Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. But new this weekend, Bill Skarsgård stars in Boy Kills World. And rather than I tell you what it's about, the movie's voice and narrator, H. John Benjamin from Archer and Bob's Burgers fame, does a pretty good job at summing it up over the next minute 25.
This was never a great city. It was ours.
Are you with me?
Always.
Until Hilda van der Kooi took it from us. This is how she keeps control. They call it the Calling.
They're all gonna watch and cheer as you die.
That's me, facing televised execution by breakfast cereal mascots. Not my happiest day. But let me take you back to an even worse one. The day the van der Kooi's killed my family and left me deaf and mute. So, I made a three-step plan. Step one, give myself an inner voice. I took the last one I remembered from this video game. Player one wins. Step two, get stronger. A lot stronger. And step three, join a team.
Welcome to the Resistance.
Yeah, go team. The mission is simple. Make the van der Kooi's pay for what they have done. Insert crazy action montage.
So it's a violent action revenge movie. Skarsgård plays Boy, who is deaf and mute, and H. John Benjamin is his inner voice. Carnage ensues. It looks fun. It looks insane. It's only getting okay reviews, though, but this is now the second wild revenge action movie. We just had Monkey Man. You saw that, right?
Monkey Man's great. Yep. Highly recommend it. Go check it out.
And then, of course, Skarsgård is back in June in another action revenge movie, The Crow. And next up, we have a new one starring Zendaya as a former tennis prodigy in Challengers.
Tashi Duncan is going to turn a whole family into millionaires.
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach. I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl?
He's not in love with you.
What makes you think I want someone to be in love with me?
Challengers, rated R, April 26th.
Zendaya's character is Tashi Duncan, former tennis prodigy turned coach who does not give a rip what you think about her on or off the court. She's married to a champion on a losing streak, and her strategy for her husband's redemption takes a surprising turn when he must face off against the washed-up Patrick, his former best friend, and Tashi's former boyfriend. As their pasts and presents collide and tensions run high, Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? Getting great reviews.
I've got an interesting bit of trivia. There's not a lot of good tennis movies out there. There have been a few, like Wimbledon with Kirsten Dunst or Battle of the Sexes with Emma Stone. And, oh, wait a minute. What does Zendaya, Emma Stone, and Kirsten Dunst all have in common? Do you know?
No.
Just ask Peter Parker.
Oh, come on!
That they're all his boyfriend or
Did
girlfriends.
You put that together yourself?
No, I saw some interviewer put that to Zendaya, and she's like blew her mind too.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's crazy. Wow. Also new this weekend, a movie that was shot in Newfoundland and Labrador called The King Tide.
Isla isn't just a gifted child.
Tina.
Many thanks to you, Isla.
She's much greater than that. Many thanks to you, Isla.
She was delivered to us on this island on the eve of the King Tide.
So after the mayor of an idyllic island village discovers a child with mysterious powers awash on their shores, the once peaceful community is divided by conflict, torn over the belief that the child is the next savior. Described as a beautifully realized mystery starring an international cast, The King Tide creates its own world where the residents of the Atlantic Island live entirely removed and out of sync from the rest of the world. This one looks creepy, looks cool. It's at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it hasn't been seen by over 100 critics or anything, but that's a good one. Good Canadian movie. And then finally, there's one called Unsung Hero.
Kids, we need your help. This is everything we have.
Dad, I wrote a song. Thought maybe we could ask for an audition.
Let's take it one step at a time.
She's a special one, son. Your family, they're not in the way. They are the way.
Whatever your dream is, I know you can achieve it.
Unsung Hero, rated PG.
So when David Smallbone's successful music company collapses, he moves his family from Australia to the United States in search of a brighter future with nothing more than their six kids, their suitcases, their love of music. David and his pregnant wife set out to rebuild their lives from the ground up based on a remarkable true story. A mum's faith stands against all odds and inspires her husband and children to hold on to theirs. It's getting okay reviews. I think the for like sheer... weird drama, The King Tide, Challengers looks great. The Boy Kills World looks like fun, insane nonsense. And in a moment, we're going to tell you about the finale for Shogun, possible series finale. But just want to quickly mention, JB, that this past weekend, because The Kingdom opens in like 2 weeks.
Okay.
So I finally checked out War for the Planet of the Apes.
Nice. What do you think?
I quite liked it, and I was actually surprised at, I was expecting a bigger scale.
Yeah.
And I don't really, I guess just because of the name War, like what was it, Rise, Dawn?
Yeah.
And then War for the Planet of the Apes.
Right. And the Rise and Dawn should have been switched around. Like, it just doesn't make sense, but.
Yeah, you're right.
The titling of these movies, yeah, it always confuses me.
Rise was one of those hot buzzwords at the time.
I guess so.
There are a lot of movies with Rise in
Skywalker.
The title. Yeah, my Lord Vader, rise. But yeah, I liked how intimate it was. I felt like it was a really intimate movie in the sense of the personal conflict, and getting to see how Caesar is becoming more human in a bad way, where he's starting to allow his emotions to kind of take over, and his anger and his lust for vengeance. But ultimately, is he able to hold that off? And to see Woody Harrelson's character and how his character arc came to an end was quite fascinating. And it was super helpful because like watching the Kingdom trailer, there were things in there that I didn't know that connect directly to the war for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I got to rewatch that trilogy. I haven't seen any of them in quite some time. I haven't seen War since I saw it in theater when it came out, whenever that was, 2017 or 18, I think. So it's been a minute since I've seen the Apes movies. It's a trilogy that's very good. 1, 2, and 3, all three are good. So I would absolutely recommend everyone rewatch that before The Kingdom comes out if you've got time.
2017.
There it is.
7 years already since the war for the Planet of the Apes. That was a movie I wanted to see, just never got to it. And bingo, bango, took you 7 years, McGarry. Up next, Jeff's going to tell us about an awesome show on Disney Plus that has come to its end for its first season, hopefully not last season. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and I finished watching the new Shogun series on Disney Plus.
Ishido-sama has mobilized to war. Toranaga will be dead in weeks.
Don't you understand? I came to your shores to use you!
The gripping finale event. FX's Shogun.
I've never read the book or watched the previous miniseries from 1980, but this Shogun is an FX series, and it's on Disney Plus as well. It's set in 1600 in Japan, which at the time was not an easy place to get to if you were not already there. The Portuguese have founded and control all trading with the outside world, as they're the only ones who know how to get there. But the show opens with a ship of Englishmen who get lost at sea and land there by accident, according to them. Their de facto leader, John Blackthorne, is taken up the various chains of command to meet the region of the area, who is Lord Yoshi Toranaga, played by Hiroyuki Sanada. He's a Hall of Fame, that guy. You've definitely seen him in things, most recently in John Wick 4. I always think of him from Lost. He played Dogen. Now he was one of the leads in this, so good for him.
He was also Scorpion in Mortal Kombat.
Scorpion in Mortal Kombat. There you go. He's one of five regents who rule Japan after the top boss, the Shogun, died with an heir who is only a young boy. So these five regents are kind of meant to rule together until the young heir is 16 years old and can take control. And these five regents are going to go to war with each other. And the series is basically a bunch of chess moves by Toranaga and others, sometimes working towards his master plan without other people even knowing that he's using them, sort of thing. And just positioning themselves for this coming Civil War. There are a ton of moving pieces here. It's an awful lot of stuff all at once. It did take me a few episodes to really understand the lay of the land, but Shogun, it was very good. It's entertaining in a fun way. The trouble with a lot of these shows is that they're so concerned with all their history or mythology and world building or whatever that they take themselves just incredibly seriously and forget to have any fun, and they just come off like a boring history lesson, which, you know, is kind of dumb because they usually don't tell straight history anyways. This is one of those shows. It's a fictionalized version of real history. There's humor, though, and light touches to contrast some of the very serious action, and there's just a breeziness to a lot of it that was very welcome. So it didn't feel like homework watching Shogun. It was actually entertaining, but you also kind of got this, you're just immersed into 1600 Japan, and there's an awful lot to learn about the way things were done at that time in that place. There's some brutal violence. Swords chopping off heads was the nice stuff. One guy got boiled alive. There's a lot of seppuku, which is a ritualistic suicide you may have seen in samurai movies before, and it's hard to watch at times. The show is also a mixture of English and Japanese, which kind of forces you to pay attention, which in this day and age is a good thing because I think a lot of us just end up playing on our phones while we're quote-unquote watching TV. The performances were great to astounding all around. The guy playing the Briton had a very distinct way about him, a unique quality of some sort that makes you take notice. His name is Cosmo Jarvis, and he's been in things I've seen before, according to his IMDb page, but I did not recognize him at all. He's obviously meant to stick out like a sore thumb in the show, and he does. He's very good. There are a few recognizable faces, but mostly new faces to me, the most notable being this woman, Anna Sawai, who played Mariko. She spent a lot of time as translator between the Briton and the Japanese, but she's also a character kind of stuck in a weird limbo. There's a lot of talk and action about honor and duty and loyalty and things like that. And Mariko had this history that we learn about that affects her present. And she kind of radiates off the screen. You really take notice. There are a lot of tragic cases in this world, but hers kind of hit hardest thanks to the actress's brilliant work. And lots of brilliant work by everyone involved. The show will be popping up on my year-end best of list. I imagine it'll be a strong contender come award season. And that is a lot of people wondering if there'll be a season 2. They used up most of the material from the book it's based on, apparently, and you can kind of tell it was sort of meant to just be a one-season deal, but success in Hollywood means sequels, so we'll see. You can watch all 10 episodes right now. I recommend that you do. 4 couch cushions out of 5 for Shogun, which is on Disney+.
I got a just question here. You say that Anna Sawai was new to you?
I recognize something in her IMDb as well. What was it?
F9, Fast Saga, Fast and Furious.
But they drive so fast past so many people, you can't catch all the faces, you know?
She had a pretty big character in that one, I think.
Really?
Her name was Elle. And she was also, you didn't watch Monarch Legacy of Monsters, that Apple TV show with Godzilla and Kong and whatnot, but she's in that too. She's the protagonist. So she's terrific. So yeah, and based on this review, this is one of those things where every time I go to Disney Plus to like watch The Bad Batch,
right,
which its series finale is next week, and X-Men 97, I'm like, oh yeah, there's like an actual series. There's a lot of good serious, like dramatic content available on Disney. And I know Jeff's been watching Shogun, and then I fall down some Star Wars rabbit hole. Anyway.
There you go. Over on Netflix, meantime, David Letterman has a new special episode of his Netflix show coming up next week.
I went to a birthday party, and Mr. MacArthur, his name was, he said, "That's a sharp shirt you have on." And I said, "Yeah, sometimes I use it instead of scissors." Pretty good.
And Mr. MacArthur laughed?
Everyone laughed.
Everyone. And so that...
And then my dad would have these, in the summer, his law firm would have these, like, summer parties at our house. I'd watch Dr. Ruth on TV, you know, I was like 5. And then I walk up to different partners and I go, "I'm going to be a sex therapist." And they go, "What?" And I go, "Sex is an experience of life. It brings joy to the body. I just repeat things Dr. Ruth said." And I was destroyed.
Wow, that's pretty edgy, esoteric stuff.
Yeah, it was a very funny bit to do. Yeah. I think I knew it's funny that you're 5, holding a Schweppes, walking around.
It's called My Next Guest with David Letterman and John Mulaney. And even though it's being billed as a special, it's just an episode of Letterman's My Next Guest Needs No Introduction series on Netflix. That series, for those who've never seen, is mostly just him doing long-form interviews with people he finds interesting. It began in 2018. There are 25 episodes over 4 seasons. Most of the guests are movie or TV stars or comedians or singers, but a few are just people he's interested in, like Malala or Volodymyr Zelensky. But this is just comedian John Mulaney, who's a great guest for something like this and among the greatest working comedians of our time. I've seen him twice in concert. He slayed both times. Really good stuff. If he's ever doing a show near you, I highly recommend you go see it. The episode's only about 45 minutes long. It's taped before a live audience in Chicago, for the most part, where Mulaney is from, but they also visit his old high school, and it ends with a dinner involving the two, plus Mulaney's dad, who shows up in a lot of Mulaney's stand-up material. 5 years ago, this wouldn't be that interesting a thing, but Mulaney has had a tumultuous few years, so there's lots to talk about. Mainly his rehab. His last stand-up special was all about that, so check out Baby J on Netflix for the long, funny version. He and Dave talk a little more seriously about it here, of course. It's a good conversation, but I'm still not sold on Serious Dave. I loved Letterman's talk show, like few shows I've ever loved. That was one of the big ones, and I just think he's one of the funniest guys ever. I watch it every single day that I possibly could since I discovered him when I was a teenager. And him and Conan are about the only talk shows I could really get into. And after Dave retired in 2015, there was a very real hole in my TV life that's never really been filled. So I got excited when this My Next Guest series was announced a few years back. But when it turned out to be Serious Dave, I wasn't really into it. I think I've seen maybe 3 of the 25 he's done. I just don't want to see him as like a 60 Minutes correspondent. I'm not saying he shouldn't do it. He's certainly earned the right to try whatever he wants. It's just not for me. That said, this episode with Mulaney is pretty good because I'm a Mulaney fan too. And when he's talking to comedians, even Serious Dave doesn't get too serious. My Next Guest with David Letterman and John Mulaney will be released this Tuesday, April 30th on Netflix. And speaking of Conan, I started watching his travel show that I mentioned last week, Conan O'Brien Must Go on Crave. And as expected, it's hilarious. If you've ever seen Conan on location anywhere, where really you know what to expect. The first episode was in Norway. It had me howling. The second episode was in Thailand. Not quite as strong as Norway, I thought, but still pretty good. So lots of good stuff out there from the talk show hosts.
So is Serious Dave kind of like when a band or a musician decides to do something different?
Like when Jon Bon Jovi starts singing songs about drought and famine, and it's like, dude, sing about rock and roll and girls. Yes.
Or when a band like U2, you know, they they experimented with their sound quite heavily over many years. You know, they went from their original sound, and then they tried this, and then they tried that, and they kept getting sort of further and further away from U2 original recipe, which I liked. I admired that, because they were trying weird new things, but it was still good.
It was still good.
And then eventually they went back to the OG recipe.
Because it was still good, and then it started petering out a bit after that pop album, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't as highly regarded as all their previous, so they went back to, let's do, what was All That You Can't Leave Behind was trying to be more like the Joshua Tree kind of a deal. So,
okay.
Yeah. No, with Dave, it's, I think with him, it's a case of, and we've seen it in other broadcasters before, but where he was so sort of boxed in doing that talk show and he had to spend 30 years talking to people he didn't want to talk to for the most part. Like, he'd get excited when Martin Short or Bill Murray showed up, but mostly he was talking to actors and he didn't care what they had to say. So I think he just wants to have a conversation with people he's actually interested in talking to.
All right. That's all the time we've got. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are the Couch Potatoes. Next week, I'm hoping to complete the first season of Fallout on Prime. It's been out for a couple of weeks now. It's really good. And remember, if it requires getting up off the couch, don't bother.